Blog Talk Radio.
Are you looking to take your social technology strategies to the next level? Then do we have a show for you. Social Geek Radio co-hosts AK Stout and Deb Evans chat weekly with innovative technology folks who share their experiences, tips, and tricks to help you take your business to the next level. Social Geek Radio is brought to you by Saying It Social and Deb Evans Consulting, LLC. To learn more about their unique services, including but not limited to speaking, consulting, and training, visit AK Stout and Deb Evans Consulting.com.
Well, it has been a few weeks since we've been here that I almost forgot how to get to Social Geek Radio. What about you, AK?
Oh, gosh, I know. I was like, why is it not coming up immediately in my browser? And why is it not on autopilot on my phone at the moment?
Yeah, it's been too long. We had a summer break, but we've been busy.
Yep.
Okay, so tell us what you've been doing for the last couple of days, because I know that you've been teaching.
Yep, I taught my two-day online class, and then this evening I was speaking at University of Baltimore to their marketing club. I think the program was titled Social Media, Why You Should Care. So I was very happy to let people know why they should care about social media.
Oh, very good. And we saw each other in D.C., which seems like it was weeks ago, but I think it was really just last week or the week before. Well, we were in D.C., so we were attending the IFA, International Franchise Association Public Affairs Conference, but at committee meetings and doing just what we always have to do when we get together was a charity miles walk, which I really enjoy. D.C. is always so pretty in the fall, and to walk with the group to the, what was it, the World War II Museum?
Yeah, the memorial.
Memorial, yeah. It was wonderful. And then, of course, the tweet up. I mean, a conference is not a conference unless you have a charity miles walk and a tweet up.
Yeah, I don't know that I even tweeted during the tweet up, but it was definitely fun.
You know what? We didn't, and I was really surprised. Like, that was the first time.
We were too busy socializing, which is good.
Yes, yes. So sometimes you
talking
have to take
to
a break.
In real life, yeah.
Right. And I'm sure you saw the pictures and everybody's seen the pictures. I've had a few people ask me about, okay, what was AK walking with when we did our Charity Miles walk?
Yeah, my Nordic poles or my ski walking poles or whatever you want to call them. They're still my best friends.
Good. Yes, but you can't tweet while you walk. So, good.
No, exactly.
All right. So here we are, and I really love our topic tonight, especially with it being back to school and concern with kids and cyberbullying and everything that's going on. So, you know, how can we keep our kids safe on social media? So with this, we have two guests tonight, and the first one I'd like to introduce is Joseph Yeager. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Deb. How you doing?
We're doing well. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, and then we'll introduce our other guest as well.
Okay, thanks. Well, I've been in social media for a couple of years now, you know, for work. But recently, in the last several months or so, I've really gotten involved with kids in social media because my own daughter turns 8, actually, on Friday, 2 days from now. And she's starting to get very computer literate, and she's been coming across some stuff online that is inappropriate for an 8-year-old. And it got me into looking into the idea a little bit more in depth. And it's scary what, you know, these kids don't realize what's out there. And, you know, we try to tell my own daughter that, you know, it's not that we don't trust you, it's that we don't trust everybody else. It's a shame that we do that way, but we do.
True. True. So we'll talk a little bit more about your profession with the Social Media Club after. Let me introduce Jen Morak, who's a longtime friend, colleague, and lives in New Jersey. And Jen, it's nice to have you with us tonight, too.
Thanks, Deb. It's great to be with you. Yeah, two Jersey girls.
Teacher, yeah, watch out. Yeah, teacher of the girls. So now you actually started your profession as an educator, correct?
Yes, I was an educator, a teacher for a very short time, and went into corporate training for a very short time, and then I purchased a Computer Explorers franchise, and I was the owner and director of a number of franchises in New Jersey for a very long time, 23 years. And then I sold my business to one of my teachers, and have just joined a tremendous internet startup called edweb.net, where we provide professional development and social networking for educators around the world.
Cool. Very good. It's great to have you both. And I see our chat room is starting to fill up when you've got some fans out there that are saying hello. So, Joe, you were involved, and I think why and how I end up finding you online is you're part of the social media club.
Yes. The social media club started about 7 years ago in San Francisco. They now have over 300 chapters worldwide, and they were looking for people to contribute to the editorial team, and I was interested. So one thing led to another, and lo and behold, I've been on the editorial team now for about, I guess, about 6 months now. So one of the things that that we try to promote is digital literacy, ethical behavior, shared best practices. You know, we really want to come off and provide people with solid research, solid information that's going to help them either personally, professionally, educationally, however it is they're looking for help.
Very good.
And the one thing that's important is that, you know, we have a worldwide audience. So from that end, the editorial team, which has about 40 members, I think, we can pick whatever content is of interest to us, because chances are it'll be of interest to somebody else.
Right. Now, there's social media clubs. There's a lot of affiliates for social media club. How many are out there?
Well, as I said, there's about 300 chapters, and most of
okay.
the chapters have, they're in addition to the socialmediaclub.org site, they also have, most of them have their own Facebook group or their own Facebook page. Many of them also have their own Twitter feed as well, so they'll keep you up to date on what's locally happening with you. You can find out, you know, speakers in your area, events in your area. So you get the best of both worlds, because you get something on a national perspective or even a worldwide perspective, but you also find out stuff locally that you can attend or is of impact to you locally.
Well, I know here in Houston we have a social media club, and we also have a social media breakfast group, which meets faithfully the first Friday of every month, and they can have as many as 100 to 120 guests or attendees. We've had CC Chapman here. They've had Google out. So I know that we get some really high-powered guests that come to the breakfast meetings. It's like from 8 to 10. It's really cool. So I love going to those.
I mean, they work with, you know, many of the well-known organizations around the world. Hootsuite, eByline sometimes works with them. I know they work with Lee Oden's group sometimes. I know they've worked, I believe, with Brian Solis. So, I mean, they're working with a lot of the biggest names in the industry who can then share what they know. In fact, the organization's motto, if you will, is if you get it, share it.
Yeah. And I think that's a social media in general. It's very transparent and being able to share things. Well, I know that one of the papers that you have written, Joe, is about texting. And we're talking about keeping kids safe on social media. And I thought it would be great to go to what I think is one of the first platforms that kids used. And, Jen, you've got kids that probably that are older now but have used smartphones and phones and texting. And Joe has a great paper that he wrote about, I said, I can't understand a single word you text. And looking through it, there's some text here that I wouldn't have a clue what their kids were saying, what they mean. So what are some of the acronyms that you would say a parent or a teacher should be aware of?
Well, you know, everyone is familiar with the old ASL, age, sex, location, you know, but there's a lot of them, and you know, the cynical parent in me seems to think that maybe they created these codes specifically to keep parents in the dark. For example, one of them is PRW, and it stands for Parents Are Watching. Or
okay.
There's another one that says POS, Parent Over Shoulder.
Oh.
Now, there's plenty of them in there that, you know, you see them, and some of it obviously is because they're texting or they're tweeting and they're trying to make it fast, but some of it is also, you know, I think, to try and keep some little privacy to themselves, especially if parents are looking at their Twitter accounts or their feeds or whatever. There's quite a few of them, like one that would really get me, it's LH6, and that stands for Let's Have Sex.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't, and my kids are grown, and when they had phones, I don't know that they were texting. It's like, I don't think I ever picked up their phone and looked at it, but not sure what the school policies are today, but I think in most cases the kids can carry their phones around, so this should be something that not only parents should be aware of, but educators too.
Absolutely. I teach college myself part-time. And, you know, my students, I hate to say it because I tell them, you know, just like you're in the movie theater, silence your phones when you're in class. But I still see a lot of them, and, you know, it lights up, and they look over to see what's going on in the middle of class. So and I'm sure if the college kids are doing it, then the teenagers are doing it.
Okay. So, Jen, in your experience, anything that you had to be aware of or worried about with text messaging?
What I think is a really great point by Joe is all of these, you know, acronyms for all of these sayings that they're texting. Right now, there's a very large push in many school districts across the country for bring your own device, BYOD. And so many, in order to keep costs down and so that the schools don't have to buy a laptop for every child, they're working with providers, vendors who provide curriculum and books and so forth that can be sent to a child's smartphone or their Kindle or their Nook or their iPad or their iPod. And so this is going to be something that that we'll have to educate teachers on because many of the students will now be using their smartphones right in class. And it's very easy to move back and forth between platforms and what they should be looking at and what they shouldn't be looking at during class time. So I think it's I had a chance to look at Joseph's article, and it really was it was funny. All of the there was just so many of them to learn about. And one of the things that we're doing at EdWeb right now is we provide communities for teachers. We do professional development webinars, and then we provide communities for the teachers to share resources and work with one another, collaborate and cooperate on lesson plans. And in October, I'm not sure if you're aware, October 21st through the 25th is actually Digital Citizenship Week. And we will be launching a community with a partner, Common Sense Media, on digital citizenship, and we will be providing professional development for teachers for free, and that's EdWeb provides all of their professional development and communities for the teachers for free, on digital citizenship. So we'll be having monthly webinars teaching teachers how to empower students to think critically about what they're doing online, behave safely, what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing online and social media for the students, and then also to participate responsibly on these platforms, you know, while they're texting on Facebook and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So moving right into the digital citizenship, and I like that. I like, you know, for adults, we're talking about their digital profile and their footprints and where they should be and shouldn't be. And Joe, I'm going to go to you. where do you see, you know, kids today and maybe even the age range, you know, what do you see as their should be a student's or child's digital footprint today? You know that they're coming out of the womb and mom and dad are buying their domain name so that they can have their own domain and have that digital footprint when they grow up. What platform should they start with?
I'm sorry. I don't know if you noticed it, but that was actually an article on Social Media Club this past week, was in parents reserving names now, mm-hmm. even though their kids are only, you know, just born.
Right.
I guess the best advice is, especially for a kid of any age really, is the smallest footprint you can make is probably the best footprint that you can make. You know, the saying I've always gone with is, once it's there, it's there forever. You know, you can't take it back. You know, you can try. You know, it's there to stay. So, you know, kids have been using Facebook. It's still the number one social media site for children, for kids, but it's dropping. It's going down little by little as they move on to other social media platforms, ones that are faster, like Twitter and Flickr and Instagram, and the one that just terrifies me, which is Snapchat. It really gets them to almost instant gratification, which is something everybody is moving towards.
Yeah, and now, and I was thinking about, you know, our younger students. So if we start from the very young, that Jen, you know, you've had experience with those three-year-olds, and there are social platforms that we know that are safe for them, like Club Penguin is one that comes
right to
mind. What are the other ones that we know, even if we're trying to keep their footprint small, what other social platforms are safe for kids?
Well, I tend to – oh, I'm sorry, Joe.
No, I'm sorry. I wasn't sure if that was for me or for Jen.
For either one.
Okay, go ahead, Jen.
Well, I agree with you, Joe, that, you know, the smaller the footprint, the better. And with my experience with young students, they call them the P3 group, is pre-K to three, grade three. I think really, you know, Club Penguin is you know, a pretty safe place for the students to be. Minecraft is another one that I would say is okay for, say, the second and third graders. But I most likely would recommend to parents to keep, you know, the children, the younger ones, you know, off of social media altogether.
Mm-hmm. And Joe, what are your thoughts?
I like I said, Club Disney or Club Penguin. That's one that my daughter uses a lot. She loves it. There's some great educational stuff. And being owned by Disney, they seem to do a very good job of protecting the children. As there's a few other sites that, as the age bracket goes up, Fantage is one that I seem to like. It does require a fee for use, but they also seem to they target grade schoolers, but they seem to do a pretty good job at trying to protect kids' safety. They take that very seriously from everything I've been able to find out, and that's for the younger age. And then as you get a little older, there's sites like FanLala or Edmodo if they're in schools, if they're doing it there.
Now, when we're moving to the older students, and before I move on, I see that we have someone in our chat, and our regular listener, Laurie, is mentioning a few sites here that I don't know that I know these. Everloop? Are either one of you familiar with Everloop?
I've heard the name, and that's about all I can say.
So we'll have to check these out. And Scuttlepad. So these are ones that I'm going to have to look at and see how safe they are. But if Laurie's mentioned them, I'm sure they're great. Moving on to, you know, the older kids, you know, once they turn, what is the Facebook rule now that, is it 13 or 14 you're supposed to age to be able to have a Facebook page?
I think it's 13 for Facebook and 14 for LinkedIn.
Yeah, I saw LinkedIn.
I guess Alex, of the world.
Probably. So I will tell you that today when I was talking to my daughter who teaches in a high school, I asked her, I said, you know, tell me what your students are using as their favorite social platform. She said it was Twitter. She said, by far, and she's been working with, she was at the middle school and now at the high school, and she said, middle school up to high school, she said, it is totally Twitter, that they're still using Facebook. But,
you know why?
It's Twitter because their parents aren't on it.
Their parents are on Facebook, so they're care about Facebook anymore, but Twitter is where their parents aren't paying attention to them.
That is very true.
And I believe also they're on the college, the high school and the college students are still pretty enamored with Tumblr.
Well, Tumblr is a blog platform.
It's a blogging, but it allows them to a lot like Facebook where they're posting videos and and you know, photos and short blog posts, not necessarily long educational blog posts that we would think of it as a traditional blog post.
And then there's I cannot believe that it's escaped me, not Facebook, but the other one that that's
Instagram?
Kind of, what is it?
Instagram?
No. Jeez. There you go. Thank you. I'm the one that's brain dead tonight. So how active is MySpace still today?
From what I'm seeing, it dropped, but I'm seeing it's gaining again.
Yeah, I know it's more about music now. And actually, one of the college kids in the thing I was doing tonight, she said she did MySpace a long time ago and then she got off of it. But now because it's more geared towards music, she's thinking about creating a page again. So I guess if that's what you're interested in, it is coming back a little bit.
Well, I guess you know, the whole thing, too, is no matter where whatever platform these kids are using and trying to hide from their parents, is that they're eventually going to be found, or there will be another platform that will come up that we're not aware of.
Exactly, because platforms are gaining, you know, starting up all the time. But, you know, Deb, it's not even a question of avoiding the parents, at least not for my concern as a parent. It's also a concern of, even if they're not trying to hide, there's stuff that they're going to find on their own by accident that's inappropriate for them.
Sure.
You know, my own daughter, and this wasn't even social media, this was just Yahoo. She put something into a search engine, and what came back was inappropriate content. But because it was in an image with a meta tag on it that made it come up, it came up to a six-year-old, as she was at the time, and it really freaked her out.
Yeah, that's scary. So now you said Instagram, the kids are starting to use, the young adults are using Instagram a lot. Is that true?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where are they posting? I guess they're posting it on Twitter, or they're just using Instagram itself as a platform.
Go ahead. Jen, you want to answer or you want me?
Go ahead.
I'm just using it on Instagram and then sharing it onto other sites, Tumblr, for example.
Right.
But, you know, Instagram is just, it's that quick, you know, photo, to take a photo and send it to all your friends in a heartbeat. And you see people, they're almost doing Instagram as fast as you can tweet. You know, it's like they're sending 10 tweets a minute. They're sending 10 Instagrams a minute if they can.
Right.
I think, Joe,
you're right. I think that they like what's quick and fast. You know, the Twitter, the Instagram, the Vine, the Snapchat, the one that scares you. Because they're quick. It's fast. It moves quickly, and that's part of what really attracts them to those particular sites, those apps.
Right. I mean, Facebook was hot. It was, you know, when it first came out, but it's not instantaneous. And some of these other sites are.
Mm.
So is Snapchat the site? Because I've not looked at it, but I hear a lot about it. Is Snapchat the site? And AK, you might know this. The site that you post to it, and it automatically disappears. The post will disappear in a matter of a minute or 5 minutes or whatever.
Pretty much. It's not really a posting per se. It's like an instant message with a photo. So you take a selfie, picture, and you send it to somebody in your address book, and you can set a duration for it to stay on their phone for no more than 10 seconds.
Okay.
And after the end of 10 seconds, it is supposed to delete itself from your phone, delete itself from their phone, and delete itself from the servers at Snapchat. But the problem is, if you give someone 10 seconds and they know how, it's very easy to take a picture, a snapshot of their cell phone. So then all of a sudden, even though it's disappeared off of Snapchat, it's still saved as a downloadable image onto your phone.
And teenagers
are sending pictures that they shouldn't, thinking, it's only going to last on their phone for 10 seconds, but then it's lasting a lot longer because they saved the image.
Right, and Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think with a Snapchat, you get a message that says you have a Snapchat. You can actually prepare yourself to take a screenshot.
You don't even have to do that anymore, Jen, because there's a brand new app that just came out about a month ago, and it's called Snap Capture for Snapchat. It's relatively new, but I think it came out in July, if I remember, end of July. And basically what happens is when you see that you have Snap, you activate Snap Capture first, and it instantly accesses your Snaps and saves them before you even open them.
Amazing.
Now, many of them may not be maybe harmless, but if there's one or two in there that are inappropriate, you've saved them as well. So even if they only gave you 2 seconds to view it, Snap Capture recorded it for you anyway.
Right.
So now, AK, you're the youngest here in the group. Have you used Snapchat?
No. Actually, I do some social media segments on the news. I'm kind of like this go-to person for one of our local news channels. And one of the reporters called me last week, and she wanted me to come in that night for an interview about Snapchat specifically. And as much as I like to go and have my face on TV and talk about social media, it's like the one site that I've never, I knew what it was, but so I turned it to somebody else. But I feel like if you're not going to be doing something inappropriate, then why would you want it to disappear in 10 seconds? Why aren't you just using Instagram? So I feel like those who use it must be doing something they shouldn't in a way. I don't know.
True. So, and this is a topic.
You can tweet, and every phone can send a selfie with a tweet that's permanent. So why would you need something to disappear unless you don't want it to hang around?
Exactly, which, I think is a little shady.
yeah, it does. It is shady. Now, cyberbullying, as much as I don't know, the whole conversation is frightening, is that this actually takes place, and fortunately I've not had any experience with it. I know that we have some folks in the chat room who have recently, but it exists. What can we do as community leaders or parents or grandparents or educators to prevent or help those that have experienced the whole cyberbullying?
I think the best thing you could do is be proactive. Talk to your children before anything happens. Don't be prepared to have the talk. Have the talk before it happens.
Absolutely.
Let your kids know that what to expect, what's inappropriate, what's acceptable, and if something happens, that they need to be able to trust you, to feel comfortable coming to you or a teacher. Doesn't have to be you. Let them know that if you're not comfortable with me, talk to your teacher, talk to your guidance counselor, talk to your principal, talk to your priest or your minister or your rabbi, somebody that you can trust who will help you.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, that if they're getting bullied via text messages, if the one that's being bullied is brave enough to take those snapshots, those pictures of those texts and sharing them, and take screenshots. And I see now somebody's in the chat just mentioning the same thing. If you get an inappropriate tweet or text, take a screenshot and share that screenshot with an authority, because perfect proof today, it's not he said, she said. You can actually take the screenshot and show the, as they're saying in the chat room, the school administrator, so that action's taken.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Oh, I was just going to say. I think in addition to the parents, the schools play a big part, and many school districts have started. Anti-bullying. New Jersey had passed a law with regards to that, so it's included in curriculum. They start very young with the elementary students, not necessarily cyberbullying, but the education starts young. And we as parents should also remember to have those conversations as the children are growing and when they get old enough, and talking to them about the dynamics of online cruelty and you know, how it affects people and how you would feel if it happened to you. And I agree with Joe, being very proactive.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the conversations I'm having with my grandson now, who's just three. If he says something that's not nice, you know, you say, oh, that's not nice to say. And it's just, you take that into, now we've got technology that we have to educate them on. Well, it's not nice to say, and it's certainly not nice to type it or receive, you know, messages like that. It's just, it can be frightening for the kids that are going through it. It's
right.
Very
and
real.
As Jen said, the teachers are being taught how to work with this problem. You know, the teachers may be the first to pick up on it, even before the parents, because they're taught how to. And the parents may not pick up on it right away. So if you think there's an issue and you're a parent, check with your kids' teachers and see if maybe they can tell you. The one sign that I see a lot of is the kids will just stop using the computer. You know, you'll notice they were always addicted to Twitter, and now all of a sudden they don't play with it as much because somebody's maybe harassing them online. But the teachers know to look for this stuff, so that's a good place to start.
Hmm. Very good. You know, and one of you had mentioned, Jen, I think it was you, had mentioned LinkedIn, and I'm going to move to that a little bit because, you know, we all know that LinkedIn is our professional business platform of choice. And now that they've changed the law that you can, you know, a 14-year-old can have a LinkedIn profile, do either one of you, or AK, you did so much research with the college kids about using LinkedIn and building your LinkedIn profile. So, AK, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts about teaching these 14-year-olds, which I guess they would be in, what, 10th grade? 14? What grade is that?
Yeah, like ninth,
10th grade? Mm-hmm. Is that the appropriate time we should start teaching
them? I don't know that you need to be on LinkedIn that early necessarily. I mean, I guess you could put, I would say, maybe more towards junior or senior year if you really want to get a head start on it. You know, I definitely think the college kids need to get on it and, you know, start networking with one another and, you know, putting the courses that they're taking and, you know, getting all of that good stuff out there. I don't know that it hurts. I don't think if there's anything, you know, that they would see that would be detrimental to them on LinkedIn. And if that's going to help them use the site, you know, better in the future and be more productive overall and kind of get that more professional business mind about them, I say why not. But I don't know that I would say absolutely positively, you know, as a best practice, you should get on at that age.
Yeah. And I haven't checked, but I thought when they issued that I saw that there was age-specific groups that LinkedIn had established. And I'll admit, I don't know.
I believe that the purpose of bringing the 14 to 18-year-olds on was it's a route for recruitment for the colleges and universities, and also for the high school students to be able to find their way to colleges, and it's another way of investigating the universities and colleges. So it's a way of preparing them for that search. And then the colleges and universities use their alumni who are already on LinkedIn as professionals and college students to also help recruit the high school students to their schools. And I think it's more about that discovery process for the high school students in the research that they do when they start to look for the college or university that they hope to attend.
Yeah, and I see here, too, that they have established university pages, and you're absolutely spot on, Jen, that it looks like it was trying to target those high school students that are college shopping, and they can start investigating the universities. And, you know, just moving away from LinkedIn a little bit, I had seen an article about university college presidents that are now very active on Twitter and sharing information about their university and tweeting about it. And it's coming from the university presidents themselves. They don't have a resource that's doing it, trying to recruit those kids that are on a platform that they're using already, which is, you know, Twitter, and trying to get them on LinkedIn. So, you know, part of me says not a bad move to educate these kids the right way and be professional about their digital platform. I don't know that 14's the perfect age, but, you know, it's starting them. At some point, you got to start them, you know, at what age?
I don't know. I go back and forth. I vacillate. I have a 21-year-old and a 16-year-old, and part of me cringes at the thought of saying to my 16-year-old, you need to spend a little more time on your LinkedIn profile.
I tell you, with all the LinkedIn coaching and consulting calls I do, there are days that I think, I wish we did have this a few years ago, because it is so much easier to learn it when you're a little bit younger than when you're the ripe old age of myself, my clients. So
29?
Joe, yeah, 29 and holding. Joe, what's your take?
I think they're doing it exactly for the reasons that was described, that, you know, they're trying to get it for the colleges. They also recognize to the kids, besides college, it takes time to build a good network. I'm not saying 14
mm-hmm.
is the right age. I think probably 16 or 17 is the right age, but you know, it can take time to look at the colleges you want, and being able to talk one-on-one with alumni like that, you know, can be a great advantage to the schools to recruit.
You know, and you're absolutely right. It does take time to build that network, and unfortunately, too many adults who are in a crunch, they've lost their job or they want to move to a different career, then go to LinkedIn and say, oh, I don't have that network to fall on, and then try to build it. So keeping that network fresh and constant and growing it, so that when you do need that network, it's there. But I'm with you. I think maybe 16, 17, as they're starting to look for universities, that, you know, they should be building that resume.
Right. I mean, I spent time with a guy who does Mel Campbell. He does a lot of social media lecturing, and he said, in my LinkedIn profile, he said, anybody who tries to connect with me, and he goes, I'm looking for somebody that has at least 500 connections of their own to see if they're worth connecting to. And I thought that was a pretty high number, but that was his profile. That was his target.
I make sure they're not an egghead or profile, and I do that with Twitter or LinkedIn. If they don't have a picture in a bio that validates who they are and gives them some credibility, I'm not going to connect. But I'm pretty much an open connector. AK, what's your philosophy on connecting with LinkedIn?
Well, I'm actually rethinking my strategy, and I'm about to do some weeding out of my LinkedIn. But I sort of did that where, you know, they looked like somebody on the up and up, and, you know, they had their profile filled out, et cetera, et cetera. I would usually connect with them because I would think there has to be some sort of reason why they're wanting to connect with me. Perhaps they want to do business with me in the future. So I would connect with them, and then I was at that point just kind of selecting people, I felt like. And then at one point, when that happened, it was somebody I had never met before. I would actually send them a message and thank them for requesting to connect with me and ask them, you know, if they wanted to discuss opportunities or, you know, kind of why they were looking to connect. But after taking some LinkedIn classes, and now I'm teaching my own LinkedIn class, I actually think that it's better if you at least have some knowledge, or at least you would be able to reach out to somebody that you're connected to, and they would know who you are because of that introduction feature. So if somebody says, hey, I see you're connected to so-and-so on LinkedIn, could you introduce me? You know, it's kind of embarrassing to say, well, I don't really know the person. So, and I've had a couple people do that to me in the past couple of months. So I'm thinking that I might kind of go through my LinkedIn and really evaluate, you know, my valuable connections and the people that I know.
Yeah. I've done the same thing. It's thank somebody for connecting. I usually say, how did you find me? Because I'm curious.
Yeah.
Was it a keyword? Is it, you know, were you searching
right.
for something specific? And then I'm quickly to unlink with someone who, you no sooner accept the invitation, and then you get an email that's nothing but a sales pitch.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, goodbye. And I'm happy to call them out and say, I have unlinked to blah, 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 because they don't like that so much. But
yeah.
It's just too easy to receive the spam.
Oh, yeah. I'm the same way.
Very good. So what else can I know we're running short of a little bit of time here before AK moves it into Geek It Out. What have we missed as far as discussion on keeping kids safe using social media? And I'm asking this to our chat room folks as well, if they have any questions that they want to throw into the chat. Or Jen and Joe, anything else that we should be covering for our audience?
Well, if parents are listening, mm-hmm. I find Common Sense Media is a really great resource. Deb, I'm not sure, you had a bit of experience with them. And they pretty much rate not only websites, but games and movies and television shows. And if you're a parent and you have a question, it's a great place to go and, you know, do a little bit of research there, because they not only tell you why they've given it the rating, but they go into depth with their answer, and it's educational.
Yeah, it is. It's a very good site. I've forgotten about it. Thank you.
I love Common Sense Media myself. I've shared several of their content on my Facebook page, and I think they're a great resource for parents.
Very good. AK, anything else you need to add?
No, I think I got my 2 cents in.
Well, it's certainly going to be a topic that's always going to be there because our kids need to be safe on social media, and social media is not going away, despite what anybody may have said just 5-6 years ago.
No, and watch Twitter during the week of October 21st through the 25th, because it's Digital Citizenship Week, and I'm sure there'll be lots of tips and tricks and everything for parents and teachers alike for knowing, you know, what to do with your children, what's age appropriate, for keeping
Good.
Your children safe.
Well, why don't I'm going to ask both of you, and I'll start with ladies. Jen, why don't you give everybody your social contact information, so if they want to reach out via Facebook or follow you on Twitter or your webpage, so that they know how to get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. Well, I work with edweb.net, which is a free online professional development for teachers. And you can reach me at my email, jennifer@edweb.net. And you can find me on Twitter at Jen Morak.
Very good. And Joe?
Well, first, thanks for having me. What I would hope that everyone can do is first check out the Social Media Club, socialmediaclub.org. You'll see a lot of great content there. But specifically to parents and helping them with social media, I've created a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/parentsguidetosocialmedia. There's some good information there, and it's growing every day, so I'm inviting everybody to come see that. You can follow me on Twitter at Joseph M. Yeager, and that's a great place to do it. I have one last recommendation for parents and for schools, and this is something I've done for my daughter's own school, which is I created a Facebook group, and I made sure it was a closed group just for the parents and the teachers of her school, so that we can talk about things that are important to us, and it's a closed group so that nobody else can look inside it. Anybody who's looking to do harm, they can't see inside. Advertisers can't get inside. So we can discuss whatever we want to discuss that's important within complete privacy. And I recommend that other parents do that for their schools as well.
That's a great idea. I know closed groups are really active today because you can share documents, you can edit documents together. I know that I participate in a couple of closed groups for business, but I hadn't thought about it as far as parents trying to get together. And great idea.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay, well, we're going to move into the Geek It Out, and you guys can hang on if you like. And if you're at a computer, you can play along. But it was great having both of you. Thank you so much. So,
thanks, Devin A.K.
Yeah.
Thank you both.
AK, I know you missed that song.
Yeah, I was dancing. I carried a line.
Yes, it's been too long. So my fingertips are ready. I've got some new tabs open, and my internet's going to stay with us, it looks like. So what do you have for us?
This is going to be Geek It Out, the app edition, because ever since I've been carrying around my iPad Mini everywhere, I'm just app crazy. I can't even tell you how many screens of apps I have right now. So it's all about apps tonight. Because I always had my Android phone, I never really got to experience the fun iPhone ones that they don't have for Android, and now I'm carrying my Android phone and my iPad, so I get all of the apps.
There you go. It's
just amazing. The first one is actually only for Android, though.
Oh.
I'm so thrilled to say that, because there's never an app that's just only for Android.
And our good friend Dana Lopez is missing out, so.
I know, sorry. Okay, so this one is called Lock It, and let's see. I meant to type the Google Lock It app. Oh, no, if you do getlockit.com, you can get to the website. And basically all it does is you install it, and then when your phone goes off so that when you go to turn it back on, it first opens it up to a lock screen, you see an advertisement. And then once you swipe through to actually open your phone, you earn a penny. So you don't even have to, like, click on the advertisement to read more about the advertiser. And actually, the advertisements are very pretty. The graphics are really nice. They don't look like these junky advertisements. And it's not every single time. Sometimes Lockit just has its own, like, nice-looking graphic that they put up there. But, I mean, I've had it installed for, I don't know, a couple of days, and I'm up to like a dollar or something, but you think it's a penny every time I open it, so I open my phone an awful lot. But I actually read an article about Lockit on TechCrunch, and they were estimating that the average person would like earn like $238 a year. So I figured if the average person is going to earn $238 a year, I might be way more than that. Again, it doesn't seem to, like, suck down my battery or anything. I've actually learned about some cool things that way. So I don't see a reason not to use it, actually. So for all you Android phone users out there, go to getlockit.com and download the app.
Okay. Well, I don't have an Android, so move on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. All right. Okay, let's see here. The next one that I really like is, CoBookContact.com. So if you go to CoBook, CoBook.co, and this one, I believe, is only for iPhone or iPad. But you can, so I have it on my iPad Mini. I was able to hook up my Gmail, and if I had an iPhone, I could hook up my iPhone contacts too. But I did my Gmail, I did Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And what it did was, once I signed into all of those accounts through the app, it literally brought all of the people that I'm connected to on all of those channels into one large address book. and then I could click through them. So, you know, of course, like if I go to you, Deb, I'll see you on, you know, the Facebook people. And I'm like, thanks, because we're connected on all of the accounts. But, you know, if you're only connected to somebody on Instagram and nowhere else, you know, they fall right in line. So if you know you've talked to somebody somewhere at some time and you can't figure out how in the world you're connected, if you have this app, you can just scroll through and it's all in alphabetical order and you can find them and you can make notes about people. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. I did download it, but then when I did the update, I deleted some of my apps. I have to go back and open that one up because I never did really connect on it, but I looked at it. It really does look cool.
Yeah. So definitely loving that one. Okay. Next up we have, this one's kind of goofy, but you seem to really appreciate it when I sent it to you, so maybe other people will want it as well. It's called Front Back.
Oh, yes.
So if you go to frontback.me, it basically makes it so that you, as the person taking the photo, take a photo, and then you can also essentially take a selfie at the same time so that your picture ends up being a picture of what you're taking and then a picture of you taking the picture.
You described it. Now, the Android, because my husband has a Galaxy or whatever, he's got a tablet, and we were taking pictures of sunsets when we were on vacation. And it's like, oh, and then all of a sudden what popped up was us going, oh, it's like, oh, look, it's a picture within a picture. And that was just part of, he didn't even know how he got it, but it was part of one of his camera features. It's like, oh, I don't have that. But now I have that because I have it as an app.
Right. I have it on my iPad Mini too, where I can take a picture either, you know, facing out, or I can take a picture of myself. And I guess without the app, you could kind of do the same thing if you're willing to go through all the steps of taking a picture of what you're taking a picture of and then combining them together. This makes it. And I could see people actually doing some fun marketing things with this, you know, taking a picture of, like, their product, and then while also having, like, themselves, you know, wearing the product or using the product or whatever the case may be. But I think there's some cool applications there.
I do, too. Good. Yeah. Now, there's one I want you to share. I don't know if you have it scheduled for tonight, but it's the one where you take the picture and it donates?
Yes, that's next on the list. So this
one is
Donate a Photo. So if you go to donateaphoto.com, just as it sounds like it would be spelled, it's sponsored by Johnson & Johnson. And you download the app. You can get it on your iOS or your Android. And you can do it one time a day, and you can upload a picture that's already on your device, or you can take a picture. And then you pick one of, I think right now there's like 10 charities on there. So the charities kind of constantly rotate out. I think there's like a certain amount that they'll raise for each charity, and then they swap them out. And you just donate a photo. So you take your picture, you upload it to the system, and then they put a little box at the bottom that says this photo helps like restore public parks or whatever the case may be.
Or cyberbullying.
Right, cyberbullying is one of them. You then share it out to Facebook and Twitter. You can share it out to Instagram. It automatically hashtags Johnson & Johnson and something else. Hashtags J&J and donate a photo. And you can write your own little description with it. So I guess it's like more exposure for Johnson & Johnson, and then they are donating, I think it's $1 per
photo. It's $1. It's $1 for every photo. So this morning I was reminded because I saw that you did it after your Charity Models Walk when you get your usually Starbucks, and it's like, I will do my photo before I use my Charity Miles app. And I took a picture of my bike and said, okay, this is what I'm going to use for my Charity Miles Walk. But I'm walking for cyberbullying as well. So I see it as two charities benefit from our biking and walking. It's like we take the picture, we do the activity. I think it's great. We need to get someone from Johnson & Johnson on the show. Jen, you have any connections? Aren't they in your neck of the woods?
They're like a mile from the house.
I know they are.
I can do. I live in J&J land. I'll see who I can find.
I think you know somebody.
I will do my best.
I really do think it's a great idea.
Yeah, we need to put them in touch and get them in touch with Gene and see
with
if they
Gene.
Can do some sort of
yeah.
like, you know, cult,
oh, great idea.
Their cross promotion with the Charity Miles Donate a Photo thing.
I'm on it. I'll talk to Gene tomorrow. Okay, great idea.
All right, all of our social good apps.
Yeah, our social good apps that drive people crazy on our Facebook pages and Twitter, and I figured they just unfollow us. It's like, oh, look, AK's doing Nordic walking again, and there she's at Starbucks, and because we let our friends and family know, join us. But have you seen how many people are using Charity Miles app of our connections now?
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
It'll be like people that I didn't even, you know, they never acknowledged it or anything. And then it's people who I know, I mean, I'm going to take credit for it. People that, you know, like I know on Facebook or I know on Twitter, and I'll see their tweet or their Facebook post. And I'm like, all right, I know the only way they could have found out about that was from me.
Oh, absolutely. I have people that say it all the time because I'll like their post and they'll say, well, you know, you're the one that inspired me.
Right.
Great. Go for it. But, of course, now everybody's out walking and out riding me. You know, when you can do – Brooke Howell is doing 30 miles on her bike, and I've done my little 4 miles. I'm feeling a little competitive, but not enough to do 30 miles.
Right. Yeah, no, it's really cool.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, I even like it, like, when I'm following people on Instagram, and I don't follow a ton of people on Instagram, but I'll see that somebody uses Charity Miles, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's so great. And I acknowledge that other people know about it besides us, but it's still so cool. And I'm like, oh,
it's
yeah,
our community.
It's so wonderful.
Yeah, I still think it is the all-time best, brilliant app. I love Charity Miles. So.
Absolutely.
Anyway. Okay. So, AK, do you have another one?
I have one more. This one is called Rove. So if you go to roveapp.com, R-O-V as in Victor, E-app.com. And this one is supposed to kind of help you, I guess, remember places that you went, like when you're out traveling. So, like, Deb, I wish I had found this before you were doing your trips to New York and New Jersey and D.C. and all of this, because basically what you do is you activate the app, and then you go traveling about your day. And, you know, you might stop at a restaurant for lunch, and especially if you're not a Foursquare user where you're checking in all of the time anyway, you might go into a restaurant, you might go into a shop, you go here, 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 and here. And it basically kind of, like, tracks you, and you can take pictures while you're doing it. It'll remind you which places that you went to, so you have this sort of nice little journal of your trip, almost.
I looked at it. I didn't download it, though.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to use it yet because I don't really go outside my house that much. But, I can't wait for that opportunity to use it.
It's going on a real trip when you go back to Colorado.
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw Frantech is in Denver.
Frantech will be in Denver in April. Yes, it will. So April's going to be here before you know it. And then IFA convention will be in New Orleans, and there's going to be a Charity Miles walk around New Orleans, which will be quite interesting. Have you've been to New Orleans before, AK, haven't you?
No, ma'am.
Okay, well, that's in February. All right, well, the Blog Talk Radio operator giving us our 90-second.
Okay, I got to start my ISA piggy bank.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think Jen and Joe are still on with us. Thank you again, guys, for joining us tonight and sharing your information. And, AK, I'll get to talk to you again next week. We can't have any more breaks. It's been too long.
Nope, we're good. We're good. All right, thanks, everybody.
All
Thank
right,
you.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.
It's a very deep show. The kind you listen to with mother. So show me.